I'm Stephanie Wilson, and you're listening to Freedom Over Fascism.
I'm not Jewish, but it's really been a wake-up call about who I've been standing next to for the last decade. And seeing people I really cared about that I considered friends make callous remarks about paragliders going into concerts and slaughtering civilians. I've seen those pictures. And, you know, I'm just religious enough to think there's good and there's evil in this world. Something I did a lot after October 7th was think about all the Jews that have been there, you know, for my life, in my career, the people that I've worked with that I really respect. And there are a lot of Jewish people in the progressive movement. It made me angry to see how few people valued them. In the end, from where I sit, it just really feels like some people's humanity doesn't count.
Hi, folks. Welcome back. Happy Passover for those who celebrate. This week, we hear from Brianna Wu, a transgender former computer game developer turned progressive activist turned congressional candidate who now does a lot of fundraising for pro-democracy candidates. After October 7th, Brianna noticed that a lot of the left-wing progressives she had worked with were cheering Hamas's slaughter of 1,200 Israelis and calling for the destruction of Israel. She's not Jewish, but she saw that her Jewish allies and friends had been pushed out of progressive spaces, even though they'd been disproportionately active in civil rights and progressive activism to protect the rights of marginalized folks in every arena for the last century. So she started speaking up on Twitter about her belief that progressives were betraying, quote, our Jewish brothers and sisters, end quote. And she has been reviled for it. She came to my attention after October 7th as one of the people who held a nuanced view of both the human aspects of the Israeli-Hamas war and the geopolitical situation, which was and is rare, at least on social media. I've been hesitant to speak about the war. My experience as a Jewish person in progressive spaces and the vitriol I've felt over the last 6 months, especially from folks who don't understand any of the long and involved history of anti-Semitism, Zionism, Palestinian nationalism, and more than 100 years of extremely complex conflict. As an aside, that doctor before my name comes from a PhD in Middle Eastern history, particularly the history of Jerusalem, so I do understand many of the nuances largely absent from the current discourse. And I know that one can hold lots of contradictory opinions at once, and they can all be true. And yet, I can be, and often am, scared about the level of Jew hatred coming out of both the far left and the far right. This episode is the first time I've spoken publicly about any of this. Although if you follow me on Twitter, you've seen some indications of my thinking. I hope that all of us can find compassion for regular people on all sides, whatever we think about the Israeli government, Israeli and Palestinian history, Palestinian independence, Jew hatred around the world, and human suffering in general. And that we can understand that some conflicts don't fit into the racial and historical frameworks Americans are most familiar with. I hope you listen to this conversation with an open mind and heart. We all need to have more compassion for each other and reach toward inclusivity in the face of a world that wants to pit us against each other. I know that this podcast community is full of compassion and good faith, and I know you'll listen to my open and vulnerable conversation with Brianna in that spirit. With that, here's our conversation. Brianna Wu, welcome to Freedom Over Fascism.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. I was so honored when you invited me. And, you know, I don't get to do a lot of Massachusetts media, so, you know, keep it here in the Commonwealth. Really exciting stuff.
Yeah, well, I don't get to talk to people in Massachusetts very often. I'm usually talking to people all over the rest of the country. So you ran for elected office here in Massachusetts.
I did. I'm not really a fan of Stephen Lynch for a lot of reasons. His Israel positions are one of them. But yeah, I just, you know, in the Trump era, I think a lot of women were looking around at the leadership and kind of not seeing ourselves represented. Yeah, I was one of the army of women that ran in 2018. I didn't win my race, even though, you know, 22% for a first-time candidate, that's solid considering I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, I learned a whole bunch of skills. There, when you run for office, there's a lot of stuff you can't understand about how the process works until you've actually sat down and done it. You know, stuff like how to file an FEC report, what you can legally do, how you can raise money, how NGP works, how to, you know, how to get donor lists, right? How to run a fundraising event, how to do GOTV. So I always tell people, like, if you run for office and you lose, it's not the end of the world. There are all kinds of things you can do in politics where you're not the candidate. So I think it was a really, really good experience for me and opened up a lot of doors.
What would you recommend to people, especially women, running for state or local office for the first time? We've had on people from Run for Something and from ARENA and other training organizations. But what do you think is like the most valuable, pragmatic advice you could give?
Raise money. That is the biggest thing. Have a fundraising base of it. I think, you know, before October 7th, I was much more on the progressive side. And I think there's a real tendency of people in the progressive movement to, you know, treat the gas that powers your car as kind of an afterthought. And that's not the reality of the situation. The other thing I've seen, particularly of women candidates, is there's so much fear about not being taken seriously, right? And what I've seen from my friends that have run for office is there's a real hesitance to do anything that's bold. Yeah, you play it very safe. You kind of second guess if you're going to run or not. And look, the fact is you're going to get mocked no matter what you do if you run for office. You're rolling the dice, particularly if you're going against an incumbent. The odds are very much against you. So I say, you know, like, look at the way the dudes do, right? Like, they'll be out on the golf course and talk to each other and go, hey, I should run for something. And then they're on the ballot the next day. Yeah, be bold. If anything, we need more women in public policy. And just to give you a really concrete example, you know, here in Massachusetts, I don't have children, but it astonishes me what daycare costs in the state. It costs more to send your child to daycare than it does to the University of Massachusetts.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
I know you know. Mortgage.
I know you know. So it's just, you know, this is a consequence of this just not being important to a lot of the male politicians around here. So we need your voice in public policy, you know, and I really feel strongly like systems are better when a totality of people are in those systems. It's not about being anti-man. It's about needing all of our voices represented. So, you know, this may get me in trouble, but if, you know, I see some names on a ballot, you know, I tend to like vote for women just because I think it's a perspective that is underrepresented.
So since then, you have remained politically active. Can you tell us what you're up to in advocacy right now?
You know, with my pretty deep personal connections in the tech industry. So again, it's one of these things where when you've got the skills and you understand how NGP works, you understand how fundraising works, you understand how media works, there's a lot of things you can do. And I wouldn't have learned any of these skills if I had not run for office.
I think the fundraising thing is probably one of the biggest mental barriers.
Oh, it's terrible.
Particularly women face.
It's a really weird skill. I mean, I have sat in this chair I'm sitting in right now for 8 hours a day, calling people up and asking for $2,800. And I've done that for 8 hours a day straight. It takes a lot of getting numb to that to do it, right? It's not fun, but it is unfortunately the way that the game is, you know, is played. You know, what I have found is after October 7th, I'm not standing with progressives anymore. They've gone to a place I personally can't go, and I'm not sure what that means for my own future in politics. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to run again, and it's really painful to see a dream that I've really worked on for a decade die. But I also know I have to stick to, I think your integrity is ultimately all you have, and there's no job that's worth selling it who you are and what you believe. So that's the way I approach it.
So can you give me a little bit of an insight? What was your process
obviously on October 7th is the day that Hamas massacred 1,200 people in Israel. But what is it, why is it a particularly meaningful day for you?
Well, you know, I'm not Jewish, but I don't want to insult people, but it's really been a wake-up call about who I've been standing next to for the last decade. And yeah, seeing people I really cared about that I considered friends make callous remarks about paragliders going into concerts and slaughtering civilians. I've seen those pictures and, you know, I'm just religious enough to think there's good and there's evil in this world. And it really, really shocked me. You know, something I did a lot after October 7th was think about all the Jews that have been there, you know, for my life and my career. And, you know, it's like, I think about the Jewish people that lived on my block in Mississippi growing up and hearing all the anti-Semitic comments and, you know, just seeing adults not say anything or not stand up to that. And then I started thinking about, you know, the therapist I had when I was trying to come out who, you know, listened to me every day for 6 months trying to get the courage. And then when my family disowned me, he called my parents and asked them to reconsider. They didn't. But he didn't have to do that, and that meant a lot to me. So I started thinking about, you know, even running here in Massachusetts, the people of Black Lives Matter rallies or Me Too rallies or just the leaders here in Massachusetts, the people that I've worked with that I really respect. And there are a lot of Jewish people in the progressive movement, and it made me angry to see how few people valued them in the end. So maybe there's a perspective that they have that I'm just missing fundamentally, but from where I sit, it just really feels like some people's humanity doesn't count. And, you know, again, there's no job that's worth your integrity. So that's my perspective.
Well, that's when you came to my attention. So I've been, you know, watching a lot of this play out on Twitter. And
so disturbing.
It's very disturbing. I am Jewish.
Well,
so I have seen, particularly online, particularly after October 7th, I had to completely sort of realign my social media world. You can have a nuanced opinion on this.
Of course.
Right. But in social media and in this world, and especially on this subject, it seemed that otherwise smart people threw out their logic, their compassion, and sort of soaked up some external psyops. And it was really enlightening to see who stood up and who didn't.
Yeah.
And what for? And I kind of get that. I mean, to some extent, but there's a lot of people across this country who have never met a Jewish person.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they have, they didn't know it. Or, you know, that's just sort of in the background. They were worried about other things. And then this happened. I had people in my advocacy world reach out and say, okay, well, what's going on? What's the history? Now, I have a PhD in Middle Eastern studies.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
It is. I studied Jerusalem, which also means that, you know, my dissertation advisor, his daughter and son-in-law were killed. His grandson survived. So when I saw a lot of people that I've worked with in the movement completely just gobble up some of this, you know, settler colonialism stuff, I had to take a step back too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think the kindest thing I could say about this is it's really, when you're not Jewish, it's really easy to go through your life and just not think about this stuff. I mean, especially in the progressive movement, I mean, there's so much stuff that's just representing, you know, the Palestinian-Israel situation is a very one-sided thing, right? And if you listen to the storyline, it's easy to just think it falls into the same dynamics of the 1964 civil rights movement, right? For me, it, like, I'm so ashamed to admit this, but yeah, I grew up in the Mississippi school system, public school system. I went into college, you know, I took computer science classes. And I, other than reading the news casually, like, I didn't know about the Six-Day War or the Second Intifada. I didn't understand deeply why the peace talks broke down for the Camp David Accords. I didn't think seriously about Jared Kushner's, like, proposal. And it's when this came up, I really needed to sit down and go, hold on, this is gut check time. My Jewish friends are under attack. I really need to take some time and know what the hell I'm talking about here. And you start reading about it, and I'm not saying it's entirely one-sided because I understand where they're coming from, but I don't understand how even the best case, the most pro-Palestinian point of view, you can't look at this situation honestly and go, Israel has a point of view that they're doing. Right? There's a reason they respond militarily here. There's a reason Netanyahu was elected. And what I truly cannot figure out is why so many smart people can't sit down and take the time to read a couple of news articles about this. It's truly baffling to me.
Well, it is hard to figure out what news articles to read.
Yeah.
To be fair. And it's easier to slip into your familiar patterns of orienting the world around what it is that you know.
Yeah.
I found fewer and fewer people that said you can be really hurt and injured and deeply, deeply wounded from October 7th.
Yeah.
And believe that Palestinian civilians shouldn't be paying the price. You can be anti-Hamas and anti-Netanyahu. You know, that you have to hold a lot of different ideas in your mind.
Sure.
And they can all be true. That was the thing that I found most disturbing. I actually had to get off Threads entirely.
Yeah.
I had gone on Threads. I thought, okay, this is going to be the next thing. Twitter's dying, blah, blah, blah. And it was horrible. It was I was blocking people left and right.
I can't use Blue Sky. It's the exact same thing. I think so. There's a lot of stuff that's going on here. And look, I want to be really clear. I've worked with the ADL for a decade on, you know, stuff more related to Gamergate and public policy as far as harassment in gaming and what women face. They've been 10 out of 10 out. If you're a Black person, a queer person, a woman, the ADL has been 10 out of 10 on your digital rights, and it hurts me to see the mud that's been slung at them unfairly. It is completely divorced from reality. But I also look around and I say this with respect. This is just my perspective as someone that doesn't have the same stakes as you. But I see two generations of Americans now that don't understand why Israel is important because they've kind of grown up on a social media diet. And I think it's really imperative that Jewish civil rights organizations get a lot more aggressive in engaging new media that actually does it in ways that people engage with. TikTok, like, this is an information war, and Jews are just losing it on TikTok. There's no pleasant way to say it. Jews are losing the information war on YouTube. Jews are losing the information war on Twitch. And until someone gets really serious about countering these narratives, it's going to get worse and not better. On this course of action, I don't see how America is still allied with Israel in 30 years because we have an electorate coming up that thinks about that alliance in very, very shallow terms and doesn't support it. And that really, really troubles me for a lot of reasons.
I think from the Jewish perspective, a lot of us, I'm Gen X. A lot of us thought, you know, this is our country. This we came here 100 and some years ago when the whole world was moving around and some people went to Palestine And most people came here because it was unlivable in Europe.
That's right.
And, you know, put a lot of work in and as a community did very well. And now we don't know from what direction the next hit's going to come. And I think that the generational trauma has paralyzed a lot of us. And we as a Jewish community are sharply, sharply divided.
Yeah.
My son goes to a Jewish high school and he was upset because, you know, it was all about Israel all the time.
Yeah.
And nothing about Palestinians.
That's fair.
And he has grown up with me in the house, and I, on the Israeli spectrum, am pretty far left. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't find a place.
Mm.
But on the other hand, he knows he was going to go to Israel with his camp this summer, and they're not going.
Oh.
They're going to Spain and Portugal, which, by the way, I'm like so insanely jealous that they're going to Spain and Portugal.
That's a really honest question about that. I'm so torn about this subject because I hear what you're saying. And I hear about that the divide that you're talking about. And I see this on social media every day. And I have a point of view, and I truly struggle with this. Like, am I being, and forgive my language, an asshole in feeling really strongly that America should have an alliance with Israel, that we need to be respecting, like we can have nuanced discussions, but feeling really strongly and vocally that this is veering in a way that's dangerous for our Jewish brothers and sisters. Is that, I'm always so struck about that. Like, is it inappropriate for people like me to be speaking up and putting our opinions out there? Should we shut up? Like, do you need more of us to stand up with our Jewish brothers and sisters? What can people like me do that's constructive in this moment? Because I'm so torn on it.
Right. Definitely don't shut up. And more people standing up is always better. And helping the people to understand that there's a long history and that they can disagree with the Israeli government.
Of course.
And not blame Jews in Pittsburgh.
That's right.
Right? That's the thing. If you're saying, I don't like what Israel does, and the synagogue down my street deserves a swastika. So where I am, which is a pretty big Jewish population,
yeah,
there are swastikas in the schools. And the schools are not treating it right. Nobody in America should take an American citizen and think that they automatically, A, have whatever opinion that they think they have, or B, that their government isn't the United States of America. When I see people say, you have to do something about your government, I'm like, my government is Joe Biden right
That's
now.
Right.
And I'm really engaged in making sure that he remains president.
That's
at the same time, I've read a lot of what's going on college campuses. I used to be the person who said, come on, people. It's not that bad. Jews are not in any way endangered here. We're in a good position. This is totally overblown in the 90s and aughts. And I don't really think that anymore. I have a kid who'll be going to college in a couple of years, and we have to think very seriously about, not only because of this, but like, do you want to send your kid somewhere where reproductive freedom
affects everyone?
It affects everyone. How are queer people treated? So one more thing.
Please.
I think that as Jews, we understand. No, I think that's too big a statement. Many Jews understand Palestinian Americans and Arab Americans are not to blame.
Of course not.
For what happened across the world. I don't get the sense that the reverse is true.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the more non-Jewish people who stand up for us with a nuanced view and not saying, hey, we know Israel's got problems. Look, there are 50,000 people on the streets on Saturday night in Israel protesting against the government. You know what that is? That is a sign of a democracy.
Sure. Right-wing movements are on the rise all around the world. Not just Israel. This is such a shallow view, and it seems so out of proportion to isolate one of America's very best allies. And I don't like Netanyahu. You can look at my Twitter from 10 years ago blasting this guy. He's terrible, right? But it's not. Yeah, so this may just be too honest, and you may disagree with it, but this is my true opinion. I think it's striking to me that in this conversation, we talk about Jews in Israel as though they have agency. They are the only people with agency. And we talk about Palestinians as though they can only react in reaction to what Jewish people do and what Israel does. And this just is so obviously nothing but a formula to continue the cycle of violence. And yeah, it's like the further and further you get into this subject, because I just keep going back in time and reading more and more. It is a truly fascinating subject, the history of this region. And the further back I go, it's like, look, at the end of the day, it's just wrong to burn babies alive on October 7th. Like, you know, at some point, we've got to like look at moving forward together if we're serious about peace. There's got to be accountability. And it just seems to me that, you know, look, with every war, I'm sure that when the dust settles, there are going to be IDF soldiers that are going to be brought up on charges and are going to go to prison for war crimes. It's happened to America. No doubt it's going to happen here. But the difference to me is ethically, Israel has a process for doing that, right? If there's not that same willingness on the other side, I truly don't see how we can ever get to peace.
Fair. When you're looking at one side who doesn't, well, actually right now, the government of Israel isn't really interested in peace either.
That's fair.
But yeah, there's going to have to be a whole lot of work, and we have to, you know, also, there's a whole lot of influences that, you know, people just don't see. Like, what is Jared Kushner doing with the Saudis right now?
Yeah.
And how does that impact what Saudi Arabia is doing vis-a-vis Iran, vis-a-vis Syria? And so it's way more complex.
It's so crazy. Oh, my God.
Right. So crazy.
You know, the other truth of this is if, you know, the Free Palestine people have their way and Israel stopped existing tomorrow, hitting Israel is the only thing that stops this entire region from descending into civil war. I mean, it's the only thing that unites them. Yeah, well, it is. You know, the Saudi-Iran Cold War. So I don't know. I think if we can agree on anything, it's that our Jewish brothers and sisters deserve our support right now. And just, yeah, if you're like me and you're not Jewish and you're listening to this, I really hope you will go read this Atlantic piece. I forget the exact title of it. It's like the end of the golden age of Jews in America, which I have to tell you, I read that and I cried because I just had never thought about so much of that. And you understand the history of Jewish people being chased out of every country they've lived in the last 2,000 years. And finding a home here in America and being part of this beautiful experiment that I do. I understand America has flaws. I think we are one of the best countries on earth. I truly believe. And you think about people that live here feeling not fundamentally safe anymore. If that doesn't wake you up that we're on a wrong path right now, I don't know what can. I mean, the ultimate question we're asking here is, do Jews count? Like, that is the fundamental question that we're talking about past October 7th. And what is so disturbing to me is to see the right wing stand for that more strongly than the progressive side is. It's really, really disturbing to me to see that. So I think we have real soul search. I'm not fooled. Nope. I'm not fooled about who they are, but
right. Yeah.
I work in politics. I look at polls every single day. And I think that we can't take parts of our base for granted. Right. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. In a purely, purely political sense.
Yeah.
I mean, those people who on the right who are so far pro-Israel have their own reasons for doing it.
Yeah, they're dominionists. I grew up with those people.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And most of the anti-Jewish violence and hatred comes from the right.
That's
and
true.
And yet, that horseshoe that we've been talking about for ever seems to be more evident than I've ever seen it. And again, it's the both things can be true at the same time.
That's exactly right. But I'm already opposed to the right wing. That's my job, is to make sure they don't get elected. You know, at a certain point, I can't just say the Republicans are mad. I don't have to do anything about my own side. This is a democracy. People are going to come to conclusions. We need to represent everyone in our coalition. And I think it's entirely appropriate. When you see anti-Semitic garbage, we need to say something about it. It got to this point. Like, I've said this 100 times. I wish I could go back in time over the last 10 years and think about every single time someone said something anti-Semitic, you know, from me being at the Women's March and speaking, or, you know, just aligning myself with these people that just bit by bit have been letting this poison seep into the Democratic Party. It got to this point because we didn't call it out. And we don't have much time left to save the patient. We can either be really aggressive and say, you can disagree with Netanyahu. You can want an adult discussion about the, you know, the memorandum of understanding we have with Israel that gives them, what, $18 billion? We can have an adult discussion. This is a democracy. But a lot of these stereotypes, it's lapsing into outright Jew hatred. And that's not what we're about as Democrats.
We're not into hatred, right? We're into more freedom, more acceptance, more inclusion, more love, for lack of a better word.
And that's right.
I think a lot of reasons you don't see that many American Jews standing up and being loud about this is because we're scared.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought, should I really have this conversation? Is it putting a big giant target on my back and my kids' back? And I think it's really important. And it's so important to sort of bring it out, but it's scary.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I was really struck that I spoke at a major Jewish conference, not about October 7th, but just about tech policy, harassment policy, primarily benefiting women, which again, yeah, this conference works on a few weeks ago. And I walk in and there's so much security there. I've never been to an event that didn't have military involved that had this much security. I was like, I have been in this building with Hillary Clinton speaking and had less security here. I have been to events with the secretary, with the Speaker of the House, who is third in line to be president, and had half this amount of security. This is crazy town. And I think that people don't understand, like, just how dangerous it is right now. Just a couple of facts. Hate crimes against Jewish people had never been higher in this country than they were before October 7th. As much as we talk about other kinds of hate crimes, I talk about trans rights a lot on my Twitter. Jews get it more. That's just a fact. So, like, you think about how much worse it has to be now, how unsafe that has to be. It's really scary. For a canvassing event I was putting together a few months ago, I tried to get one of the most popular Jewish people in news to come to it. He couldn't say yes because we didn't have armed security on hand to follow him around. And that's how many death threats he's gotten. So, you know, I think, especially like if you have kids involved with it, that's really scary. And I hate that you don't feel safe about that.
Well, there's this a little bit of a paradox, which is that Jewish schools and synagogues have always had security. Every synagogue and Jewish school has had security and relationships with the local police and local police doing drive-bys for decades. It's not a shock. What you said about...
What's a shock to me?
It was not a shock to me at all.
I don't know what to say, except I'm sorry. I, I don't know why I didn't see this more clearly before now. I'm in very good company and just not paying attention to it. And all I can do is understand it from here and make it more of a professional priority. So
in what ways, you talked about speaking to a Jewish women's group.
Mm-hmm.
What ways has it become a professional priority as much as a personal mission?
If I'm good at anything in my career, it is helping set media narratives. One of the things I'm really proudest of is if you go back 10 years to Gamergate, I really helped shine a light on what women in the video game industry were experiencing, the harassment, the death threats. And I did a lot to try to change public policy around that with our mutual Congresswoman, Catherine Clark. And I'm really proud of that work. Something I see is extremely important for me to do now is to help raise these issues in new media, because younger people don't watch CNN, they don't read the New York Times, they don't pay $34 a month for Wall Street Journal like I do. And I think just simply advocating and helping people understand what's going on here for Jewish brothers and sisters, I think that's really important. Something I think about a lot is national security, particularly cybersecurity. This is a really big professional expertise of mine. I think people do not understand the value of our alliance with Israel. I think America gets a lot of it in terms of geostability, in terms of cybersecurity expertise. If we do end up in a Cold War with China or a hot war with China over Taiwan, our alliance with Israel with cybersecurity is going to be paramount. So something that's professional priority for me is just like helping people understand the value of funding Ukraine. I think our alliance with Israel as the only democracy in that region is beyond important for the geostability of the world and for the United States. And I want to very loudly advocate that. I think Israel has a right to exist, and I think it's really good for the country. So, moving forward, I'm going to dedicate a certain amount of my public presence to talking about that and raising money for candidates that will fight for those things. It's the right path for the United States.
I appreciate all of the time and the work that you are putting into that and other national security issues. And there's a whole other conversation to be had about Russia and...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and... Republicans and disinformation. And a lot of that actually is part of the response to the events of October 7th. There's a PSYOP there that has deeply embedded itself into the narrative. It's like watching like a train wreck in slow motion. I say that all the time on here. But one of the things that I am committed to doing is helping people figure out how they can contribute to achieving more freedoms or protecting more freedoms or getting them back if they're in red states from wherever they are. And one of the things we talk about a lot is talking to the people that they know.
That's right.
Our listeners are activists. People trust the people that they trust. And so carrying the message of democracy, I think, also means carrying the message of inclusion.
I agree with that. I think if you listen to me 10 years ago or when I was running for office in Massachusetts, a lot of the thing that I talked about the most was feminism, online harassment policy, cybersecurity, and please don't misread me. Those are all very, very important subjects. But as disinformation and divisions have continued to swallow the United States whole, I talk about one thing primarily these days, which is democracy. Democracy is under attack in the United States and around the world. And to that end, something I think I can do, and I would really encourage everyone out there to do that as well, is it's long past time that we tried talking to the Republicans more. I think that we've really siloed ourselves over the last 10 years. And what I've found is, look, there is MAGA there. There are white supremacists there. There are, you know, people that hate trans people and women and gay people there and QAnon people. And some of those people cannot be reached. But all Republicans are not like that. And at the end of the day, we have to find a way to live with each other. And I think it's so far past time for us to talk to our neighbors and try to come to an agreement about what we do agree on, which is the Constitution, which is democracy, which is our local communities. It is about the rule of law. And I think it's so important for us as Americans to not lose sight of how fragile our democracy is. We, as flawed as the system is, they would kill for it in countries like Russia. So I think that a lot of moving past this era starts with talking to one another again.
And there also has to be a lot of really reckoning with and understanding our past and not just the past we wish we had.
Yeah, I grew up in Mississippi and, you know, the Civil War, you know, the aftermath of the Civil War is just a wide opened wound. And yeah, you can drive through through Mendenhall and you'll drive past the place that, you know, Mississippi Sheriff took out a service revolver and executed 3 civil rights workers, 2 of whom were Jewish, trying to register Black people to vote. I think we've never really had an honest conversation about the legacy of that in this country. Our goal here has to be, I've thought about this so much, we've got to, instead of trying to destroy the other person, we have to be thinking more about how to bring all of us together. Because I do think most decent Americans, I think they want their Black brothers and sisters to do well and to succeed. I think a lot of people do feel that way. And I think at the end of the day, most people like looked at the Me Too movement and saw that women were getting unfair shake in this country in a lot of ways. Yeah, I think that there are a lot of good people in this country that see these attacks on trans children and, you know, they just want kids to be safe at school. And I think somewhere along the line, we got into this mode where we had to win instead of come together. And I think for me professionally moving forward, that's what I want to do is, you know, hold the line where we have to, but try to stand behind what unites us.
And what a way to end. Because if we can get past this moment and get past the threat of fascism completely overtaking the country, we have to also have a path to move forward. And it's not a battle that's going to be won in one election.
That's right.
But it's all part of the same goal. And I was really glad to have the chance to have this conversation with you.
It's genuinely my honor.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Over Fascism. And thank you to our editor, Benji Wilson. Please join our Patreon at patreon.com/freedomoverfascism. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please drop us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. We thank you for choosing freedom over fascism.